Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here today to continue our expectations series. We're talking about TJ Tampa and Ben Cleveland today as our two players. Again, one offense, one defense every show, giving opportunity for some cross-sectional analysis from various analysts in what is a very deep Ravens analyst community right now. Joining us for this show is Alec Poulianos. Alec, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Happy to talk to these two players. I think they're going to be big pieces of the upcoming season.
Yeah, they're a cool set, and I put people into one, two, and three categories based on how much playing time I thought they'd get this year. And Tampa and Cleveland were two twos, so I paired up twos, and then a lot of people have like ones and threes that they're that they're talking about. But this is a pair of twos, so it's definitely one of the interesting pairings of the entire group. So we'll start with TJ Tampa, the fourth round selection for Iowa State. I thought a tremendous value selection, and I had him as the sixth best corner on my board.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things. I mean, it's been belabored that even EDC said after a while it became malpractice not to pick him. And it's true. He was such a high pick. I think he was like number 55 or something, 56 on the Beast big board by Dane Brugler. Mm-hmm. Very highly touted corner. And the only reason he fell, I imagine, is the slow 40 time. He recorded a 4.58. He also hurt his hamstring during the combine, so there's that to consider. But I just think he's a great player that I think will have a lot of versatility. That's what Harbaugh said as well in the presser. And I'm curious to see if he gets any safety snaps. That's kind of my biggest question mark, because I feel like he could be a great safety. Harbaugh mentioned he had inside and outside versatility, and in college he didn't really play inside much. So I'm curious what he meant by that.
He's big enough probably to play safety at 6'1", 189. It's a little light framed, frankly, even to do that, as most corners are. Most corners have a little bit of a difficult time adapting to that role. But I would agree. I mean, the Ravens have not found that split field guy. They don't have him on the roster right now. It's not Ardarius Washington. He's a little bit too small for the position, may or may not have the instincts necessary to play on the back end. It's not Breed. It's not Kane. Both those guys, to me, are dimeback hopefuls or pure strong safety in Breed's case, but not a good split field safety. So they don't really have that guy on the roster yet. And I think there are two guys who I think could be the answer. And Tampa is one of them, and Humphrey is the other. That if the Ravens find they just have a little bit too much talent at outside corner, they don't want to risk moving Tampa early in his career, then I think Humphrey might make some sense to play some split field.
That is the rub of the whole situation. You can see how TJ Tampa can fit as an outside corner on this team in just 1 year's time with mm-hmm. Stevens and Humphrey nearing the end of their contracts or having a good out. At the same time, you have to consider the fact that he actually started playing corner in college. He was recruited as a wide receiver. So he's, I guess, still finding his way as well as a defensive back. So it wouldn't be like too crazy, I guess, to transition him out of the corner position since he is new to the corner as well. So kind of reminds me a little bit of Stevens, and I hope we don't make him a misfit toy like Stevens was and we find what he's good at early, because Stevens really benefited once he got into a role that was best suited for him.
Right. It hurt. The other side of that is to say it hurts Stevens to be playing multiple positions. And I think that's certainly true. I really like Tampa for a lot of reasons in this draft. He's one of the best size, length, speed combinations in the draft. And part of the speed thing, you mentioned a kind of a slow 40 time under some conditions that we don't know exactly really how much injury played a factor, how much injury was a factor in that. He had a 4:45 other time posted on one of the websites. I think it's NFL Draft Buzz, who collects from various sources. So I don't know what that means. That might have been an internal time. It might have been I honestly don't know where that was taken because I didn't have any context for it. But when I see a guy with his size, length, and speed that also has highly corroborative coverage statistics, and he had 4.9 yards per target allowed last year, a 54.8 opposing passer rating. I mean, that's top shelf in terms of the available corners. And, mix that with that size, which is frankly a little bit better than Wiggins' size. His speed is not as good, but his size is a little better. Mm-hmm. You have a very exciting player.
No doubt. And I think it's interesting to see how, I wonder if they had any GPS data on him, because he definitely showed on tape that his long speed wasn't the best, but he has incredibly good feet and early quickness that will help. And maybe that's why they also see the inside versatility is like that's a really useful skill when you cover on the inside.
There were several corners in this draft that I think play faster than their speed, and he's one of them. And one of the things he does very well, first of all, he can find the football in the air while keeping his hand on the receivers. That's very important. The classic guy who does not have that is JAD currently with the Ravens, and it's a big problem. But Tampa has it, and he also has a good set of hand fighting skills, which carries him down the field. And if you're constantly distracting the receiver in that way, you're effectively making that receiver slower. You're making it more difficult for him to get separation from you in a lot of ways. And that's something that I really like. Now, that said, the one game where he had trouble at all, and you can look at his whole set of games, they're very consistent and outstanding in terms of not giving up much. But the Texas game where he had to face both Worthy and A.D. Mitchell was his tough one. He allowed 5 out of 6 receptions in that game for 68 yards. And by the way, if that's your worst game, you're doing pretty well, but still – that's a talent that he will face week to week in the NFL.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely want to see him continue to improve. I think his hands are good. His instincts of the balls are good, but I think he could still work a little bit more on his jam technique. But you can't deny some of the statistics. One of the crazy ones was one touchdown catch in the final 934 defensive snaps against
defensive, not coverage. That's defensive, right?
Yeah, I guess it was, okay. I don't know the context, but I'd imagine so. They weren't right. On pass plays.
Yeah. So that in his final season, he only gave up one TD. That's certainly true. But, anyway, real good. The metrics, don't draw you astray. And he certainly played in a passing conference in the Big 12. So it's a place where you would expect he would have to face some gunslingers week after week after week. Yeah. But anyway, did a good job there. Anything else about who you either weaknesses that he needs to overcome or who you want him to become as a player you want to talk about?
I guess one thing I also noticed, I felt like he didn't have the best hips. So getting a little bit more fluidity would be good. His feet are really good, but I felt like the hips could use a little bit more work. So that's something I would like to see improved upon.
All right, fair enough. And that's usually a big ask to improve your hips.
I know.
At the NFL level, but it is what it is. And it may be some corners they make up for it with exceptional press skills, and you make a reasonable point that he's not at the very top, certainly of the NFL, but even of the college ranks at that. But maybe he could be a good cover three corner and be looking to make the play, and the instincts do seem to be there, and the metrics certainly are there in terms of supporting the notion that he's going to be quite good. But we'll have to see. It is one of the ones we'll have to see. Let's talk about what makes a good and a great season for TJ Tampa. Let's start with a good season.
Oh, I thought we were going to also talk about potential role. I know we kind of
go ahead, that. please. No, that's good.
Yeah. So one thing I think I noticed as well is he was a good jammer on punt returns. So I could totally see him earning a spot on special teams. And I'm also kind of curious to see, you know, now that Queen's gone and we don't know what the status of Simpson will be, if they're using more dime, what kind of dime did they want to deploy? I could also see them using four corners and him being one of the corners. So I could see that being a package, because I think that kind of like, I wanted to point those two things out just because that kind of fits into my good and great season, you know?
Okay. Well, let's talk about the possibility of a four corner dime, because the Ravens have played a little bit of that. The Ravens are traditionally of all the dime snaps in Ravens history, I'd estimate more than 85% of them, probably more than 90% of them, have been a 3-3 dime where they bring a third safety out of the field, put them in the box. But it's not to say they've never done it. They did do it 19 times, if I recall, in that game against Arizona in 2019. And the reason I know is because it was like 19 of the 21 times they played a four-corner dime that year.
Okay,
so nice. Fair amount of dime that year, but still, you know, that represented about what? More than 5% of the dime snaps. No, but probably a little bit less than 5% of the dime snaps anyway. But anyway, substantial number of them that particular time. Point I'm making is four corners and a dime, the way the Ravens have deployed it has been a very specialized thing to do against 10 personnel. It's not really something you do against more standardized looks with at least one tight end. Right. You have one at least one tight end. You're usually just rolling out three corners there and trying to cover that tight end with either in zone or with a safety in man.
For sure. And the reason I kind of brought it up is because we mentioned, you know, maybe Tampa plays some safety, right? Yeah. So it's like what is he in that setup? My imagining the other three corners would be Wiggins, Stevens, and Humphrey. So just curious if he'll end up out there, because you're never going to take Hamilton or Williams off the field if you can help it. So those guys I think are going to be on there. So I could see that being a package. So that's the number one thing I'm most interested in about is with Zach Orr is a dime coming back? That's the number one question.
I think if I had to bet on this, I'd say no.
Really?
And the reason is this. First of all, Zach Orr was himself a three down weak side linebacker, which is the most, you know, personal bias you can possibly carry into the role. Second of all, you know, he was significant in terms of the game planning last year under McDonald. And, you know, this defense had a lot of success. So I think that they might try it that way. Now, it all depends on Trenton Simpson. If Trenton Simpson can't handle the third down coverage responsibilities as they envision him, if he turns out to be Patrick Queen again, I don't think they're going to be as slow to pull the trigger on getting him off the field as they were with Queen. Queen obviously was a Mike to start with. They had to push him to Will in his third season because of, you know, he just was not cutting it. And and getting Roquan was the piece that really solved the puzzle. Well, they've got Roquan now. So maybe I think it might be, in some ways, it might be less likely that they take him on the field. On the other hand, I think that if he's falling apart in coverage for any reason, I don't think that. We just did the Trenton Simpson episode tonight as well. It was the one right before this. So you've probably heard it yesterday if you're a regular listener of the show. So how that plays out, going to be very interesting. What kind of dime they play? Interesting that you bring up the concept of a 4-2 dime. And the possibility that they might do that against not just 10 personnel.
Right. So I guess I'll go into them my good season. So I said he'll be a solid special teamer, and then he would also find a specific role in packages that he's frequently called upon and performs well. Shows signs that he could be a starter in the future year when other corners go down.
Okay. All right, I think that's a good way to put it, and I like your special teams component, especially thinking of him as a jammer, because that's certainly his role on punt coverage. Since he's you know, a fast and presumably decent tackler, and also a guy's going to be active on game day as a backup, he'll certainly be on at least both the coverage, sorry, the punt return team and the kickoff coverage team. He won't necessarily be a hands guy that they'd have up front, but he well could be in terms of the kickoff team as well. And that's changed, right? Because you have to announce onside kicks this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't anticipate many onside kicks.
Yeah, I think. Well, but the point there is that it's going to be it will change how teams set up their kick return operations.
Yeah,
and so it may not even have the same meaning to it that it once did. So, but it's a good point you make. Anyway, good season for me. I'll just read mine directly. Remains healthy for the preseason, where a large portion of his 2024 play may occur. So we've had a number of recent Ravens defensive backs who have not met that standard. Yeah. they get soft tissue injuries. Wide receivers and corners, both more than anybody else, have lost time in the preseason and not lost out on a significant amount of playing time, significant amount of live fire that was supposed to help them develop. Gets on the field through confluence of circumstances plus some backup time for between 100 and 200 total snaps to stay on the developmental curve. So Anthony Averett, 65, then 200 his first 2 years is kind of like one thing I use as a starting point. Tampa, might be a regular next year. If he's going to be a regular next year, he's going to need between 100 and 200 this year for this to be a good season. And I think they will do some things with him as a player, probably to try and keep that on schedule if they think that's what's going to happen. Harbaugh, he has some play for it now characteristics, but he also understands about the future. And I think that he'll encourage Zach Orr to make sure he knows what they have and test drive Tampa to the degree they can in 2024. And very similar to you, flashes and Leafs fans wanting more in terms of playing time as the critical 2025 crossroads with Stevens and Humphrey approaches. So, both those guys, Stevens looks like his agent has already told him he should play for the big money and he's going along board. There've been talks of maybe he could be extended. Once you get to this point, he's not extended. I think the chance goes down pretty significantly that it'll happen. He's not at present, he's not a candidate to be a franchise tag guy because it costs too much, but he would be a candidate to be a divisible benefit guy. That divisible benefit only exists as long as the injury risk still accrues to the player. So once that goes away, obviously it's sand in the hourglass as the season goes on, then there's less divisible benefit to split. So you don't want to put yourself in a case where you're near the end of the season. He says, well, what's the point now? I mean, I can go to the open market. You're going to undercut the open market. I know that. And I'm comfortable right with whatever remaining injury risk there is. So.
Yep. No, I definitely think, That ship basically has sailed at this point. Yeah. I would be really surprised.
Yeah. They've got, I would say they've probably got until about the end of training camp. Once they start playing, he won't play much in the exhibition season. So probably until the start of the regular season. I guess they've got that long.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. So great season. What's a great season for TJ Tampa?
I think he has to get thrust into a starting role due to circumstances and excels, giving the team the confidence to pull the trigger on moving on from either Stevens and or Humphrey and feeling good about it.
That is exactly the same freaking thing. And I'll read mine too, because this is why I hate going second here on these, but it's what I want to do. Forced at a trial by fire due to injury and passed his test with a fine rookie season as a plus outside cornerback in 400 plus snaps. Ravens are encouraged enough by his play to move on from one or both of Humphrey Stevens for 2025. I couldn't be more so. That's a direct hit. Well, we're either both going to be right or we're both going to be wrong. So but I'm actually pretty comfortable with that. So,
yeah,
let's talk a little Ben Cleveland here. So start us off in terms of, Cleveland's path so far in the NFL been an odd one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have the not ever getting like the starting job when you felt like he was performing well. You have the crazy weight thing and the failed conditioning test after his wedding situation, the potential doghouse situation, just constantly can't find his way on the field when you feel like he might be the stronger performer in a given competition. And it's kind of just all come down to this season where now they've decided to move on from Zeitler, leaving the right guard position wide open which feels as though if you've been reading the tea leaves of the last, you know, maybe last season, for instance, that was where they wanted him to be. Because I'm still not convinced that he couldn't have been the left guard last year over Simpson. Simpson just did not do enough for me to say like Cleveland couldn't have potentially won that. But I understand why he would fit better as a right guard in our scheme. And maybe they wanted to like keep him around for that possibility that Zeitler got hurt. And we even saw that, you know, and there's a couple games where he played in Zeitler's absence. And I thought he played well. So this is the year. I feel like it's his job to lose. And I'm very curious to see if he's going to have a Ben Power season.
I think that it's certainly possible. He did play very well in the two games, week 17 and 18. Miami and Pittsburgh played very well both weeks. B in both games, as I scored it. I think going back to your comment about right guard, that is where his future appears to be. I don't really see any world, even though I think Voorhees would make a fine right guard. Voorhees has the strength to generate torque and to generate displacement that I think, clearly that's what we hope is a part of Simpson's game. Mm-hmm. But he's also played right guard in college at Georgia. And, you know, in big time territory, his inside out processing is a natural left to right processing. It doesn't mean you can't change that. There is some difference maybe in terms of if you have a stronger arm or whatnot. I don't completely buy that you can't do that after that. You can't adapt to that after all of the very average athletes that the Ravens have made into good pullers. So, I mean, a bunch of guys who were, you know, they were tackles, James Hurst, or they were centers and unathletic like Bradley Bozeman. And they came to the Ravens and they had, not only did they pull very well, they pulled very well in very high volume circumstances. Yep. And so those are guys who, you know, if you can get them to do it, then why can't you get Ben Cleveland to do it? Ben Cleveland is a superior athlete to Bradley Bozeman. I can guarantee you that. he's quicker. He's bigger and there might be some things about him that are a little bit clunkier, but he's a hell of a lot stronger too. So, you know, you as much as I like Bozeman at guard, and I really did, I thought that, if he can do it, then Cleveland should be able to adapt to it too. And the Ravens obviously thought the Simpsons should be able to adapt to it. And Simpson was okay, except for the penalties, which is about the biggest exception any human should have to make. This spaceship is in fine shape except for the missing door. It's kind of like that. But anyway, I don't want to say too much about this other than to say that I think he makes a lot of sense at right guard. I think that they would be loath to make the move at this point to move him back to the left side, even if Voorhees were every bit as good a candidate or maybe even slightly better to play that position than him.
Agreed. It just feels like this is the plan. There's not really any competition other than, I guess maybe Jones could play on that side. He didn't play it. That wasn't the side he played.
Jones played a left guard.
That's what I'm saying. He didn't play it though. Like, but I guess I don't see Salah doing it. You mentioned Voorhees.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So here we are, right? Like, I just don't know where the competition is actually going to come from.
I mean, Voorhees would be the guy if somebody else made themselves indispensable. So yeah. Let's say Voorhees is everybody's good as we think he is. And a lot of people obviously have very high expectations for Voorhees that are probably unrealistic.
Sure.
Voorhees is the one of the two of Voorhees in Cleveland that is the least likely to carry through on his apparent incumbency. Neither of them is a true incumbent. They've kind of been a presumptive, you know, left guard and right guard at this point. I think Voorhees is probably the slightly more higher chance to not carry through on that. But if I had to guess, I would say that Josh Jones is going to be a backup left tackle and not a guy they risk playing at guard. I don't really think they're going to do that, but okay. It'd be interesting to see how it works out. But the Ronnie Stanley injury risk is so high that I almost think you don't need two guys to basically be that role, but you need two backup tackles. And I would hope that they would save Jones and McCary for exactly that. And not have to resort to some much worse option that might exist. And that might, honestly, I would put Falele in that category. I know that the Ravens are a little bit higher on Falele, but I think Rosengarten probably wins the right tackle job. McCary stays as a backup tackle and because he's above the replacement level there. And then also that Jones is primarily a backup tackle.
Yeah, all that makes sense to me. I think my whole thing with Stanley is I agree, you need to be ready for his backup. And the problem is if they're really wanting to get Rosengarten on the field this year, and I think they do, he'll be the right tackle. And that's where he had experience as well as college. Although, like, I really do feel like that they want him to be left tackle next year. I'm like very convinced that they want to flip him next year. But they don't want to do the two for swap unless like maybe it's a season ending injury. Right. I don't know. Anyways, Not the point of this show, but a very interesting line situation with a lot of versatile pieces that could be flipped around and then a couple pieces that feel like they're stuck in one spot.
Right. Right. And then it's a better situation because the Ravens don't have a bunch of guard tackles. They might literally go into the season with 10 offensive linemen on the roster on a 10 to make 8, kind of a game day activations basis. And have five guys who are basically offensive tackles. And Jones could be a backup guard under extreme duress, but I wouldn't want him to be that. Same thing with McCary. I don't know who I guess Samak is the other backup center they have. So they have multiple options there. But it's getting difficult to find space on this roster for Saleh. He's a guy.
I feel like it was tough to find space for him last year.
Yes. Yeah. I still got an activation somehow. Yeah.
No, I really think that Saleh has to have a huge preseason or he legitimately could get cut in a year or two, which isn't completely outlandish given the fact that he was a 6th round pick. But I feel like his year three is year two just because of the roster situation.
His year three is year two.
Normally, we talk about year three rookies as dispensable, right? Like that you might.
Gotcha.
I feel like he's already there at this point.
Okay. Yeah, that's a valid point. Normally, if a guy can play tackle, he gets more leash on this thing. But the Ravens certainly have a lot of tackles to sift through here. And maybe I'm wrong about Jones. Maybe Jones is a backup interior lineman. The Ravens could do better with him than his previous coaching has gotten out of him at tackle. And maybe there's more there, but I don't know. I wouldn't go out and sign a player like Jones unless I thought for what they did, unless I thought he could play left tackle. I would not do it. fair. So, it is what it is. It's not even, I mean, it's not making that much less than Zeitler makes. So it's, you know, it's really, you would do that then with the Ravens moved on from several players, and all of Simpson, Zeitler, and Moses. Don't kid yourself. The Ravens had reasons why they wanted to get rid of those guys. It's not just a matter of they liked other players or they wanted to get younger or this or that. I think, you know, we could go through real quickly what the reasons for, but I think Moses' case, it was injuries. In right. Simpson's case, it was penalties. I don't think it's really injuries in his case. They're frustrated at their inability to correct his penalty problems. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Zeitler, I think it was a combination of the injuries that came up at the end of last year and the fear of getting stuck on a 2 years for the price of one contract with him that wouldn't really make sense. So they don't want to get into he's signing a 1 year deal at the end of his career in the guise of a 2 year contract, even though they're doing that with void years, essentially, with a lot of players.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing, in my opinion, is that this year they knew they could probably get a comp pick out of Zeitler. Right. And I think next year, or like with what we're doing now, there's a potential getting another comp pick out of Powers, right?
Cleveland.
Basically. Cleveland. So I just, that's kind of like, I feel like there was enough signal that Cleveland could do this job at a good level, that they felt confident moving on and seeing what they had.
Okay, so here's my counter to that. I got no problem with believing you're going to get a comp pick for Zeitler, but then you got to read the market. And the market says Zeitler's not going for the same guard money as everybody else did, which is one of the crazy things about free agency this year is Nobody really put a value on Kevin Zeitler. I was hoping for $10, $12 million a year given what everybody else signed for. And then all of a sudden he signs with Detroit, and I don't remember exactly the terms, but it's something like $6 million.
It's 1 year, $6 million. It's crazy. Yeah, it made no sense. It was very surprising.
And that's not going to get you. I mean, that's going to get you a 6th round comp pick. I think it may already actually have been one of the ones that got canceled out for the Derrick Henry signing, but it's not exciting. And if you're at that point in the market, so the Ravens still have a bullet to fire. So it could have been some, they could have had Zeitler back. I think you really got to ask yourself, it's not really a comp pick because the Ravens are so far over on comp picks. It's not even funny. Last year, you look what they did to go get Nelson Aguilar, and they did give up a 6th round pick in exchange for it. And it was a big part of the cost. This year, the letting Zeitler go had zero value for this team. They had enough total net outages to have the same comp picks. So it's very frustrating to me, you know, what happened. But they had to have reasons. They had to think that his injuries, there was less chance of him maybe coming back from him, or maybe they just completely misestimated his value and they thought they'd gone too far in the process to make amends with Zeitler at that point. But you would think that, you know, if there were still legitimately having discussions about bringing OBJ back late in this process, you certainly bring back Zeitler.
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying. I think it's a decent possibility that they thought, like we did, that he would gain more money and thus a better comp pick. And then when the market didn't bear that, he was ready to move on. And I mean, he went to a competitor, so it's not like he went to a bad team. So There's that. Yeah.
All right, let's get back to Cleveland here, because I think that, you know, some of the things he did at the end of last year were good. Had a pretty good pass blocking year, which was one of the really encouraging things. And gave up 2.5 pressures, a quarter of a sack, as I have it. One of the continually frustrating things is how many people will quote zero sacks from PFF. Well, PFF, I'm just going to say this one more time. No, I'm not going to say it one more time. I'm going to say it as many times as I need to say it to get the frickin' point across. PFF does not give a sack to the first pressure that moves the quarterback off the spot unless that player's assignment actually makes the sack. It is complete bullshit. Okay. Yeah. It's complete bullshit. And so, you know, it's the primary place where you really need to have fractional sacks. It is often true that the guy who moved the quarterback off the spot is not fully responsible for the sack, but that's why you need to assign half and a quarter and a third and whatever, frankly, is appropriate in terms of fractional sacks. And it's a big miss by PFF. And so, I hope it's something in a future system that they create that they're willing to correct. They've been pretty good about trying to advance their methods of analysis, and they have Timo Riska now in R&D is very good, and he might bring them along to the next level in terms of looking at that. So hopefully that will. Point was 76 pass blocking snaps. It's not a lot to go on last year, but what he did very well, and that was nice. He was at times an enormous displacement player against the runs. We saw at times when he was in there that he was moving people around. I think fair to hope that he'll be able to generate that torque that the Ravens seek to create level two opportunities when they're playing the power game.
Yeah, I think one of the things I was thinking about too, I was watching all the snaps from last year, is I wanted to see him. I feel like one of his limitations is that he doesn't often give a helping push to Linderbaum, right? And then move on to his assignment. And I think it's slightly because of his like kind of stiffness. If he's ever able to get a little bit more fluidity there to be able to land that punch a little bit better, that'd be good. Cause I didn't see much of it. I don't know if that was just a scheme or like what it was, but I felt like he only did it once or twice in all of his snaps last year. And I would expect more of that.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I will say that's one of the things I really loved about him coming out of college is how he kept his hand on the center's man as he processed from inside out at right guard. So it's something that he should still be good at after you know what he's done. I want to see him do that as well. And oftentimes, you know, you don't always have a guard bubble there. It's oftentimes that one technique is really going after the guard. Doesn't end up being Linderbaum's man. So there's a lot of times where he's the guy left with that assignment. Certainly in the run game, that happens all the time. Is that he might be the trailing player, he might be the guy who's climbing, and then you hopefully see better cooperation between those two players. That is something I had problems with Linderbaum as a run blocker, by the way. And Linderbaum had, you know, he had notable problems versus bigger men as a pass blocker, but didn't really have very many negatives at all as a run blocker. But one of the things that I didn't like is that he was kind of a did not leave the man next to him with as big an advantage as you could hope in terms of being the trailing player on a run play. He was too concerned about getting out into level two that he'd give a relatively minor shove. Now they've got their go codes internally, so the guard is in part responsible for letting him climb at that point. But I just felt like Linderbaum was a little bit too much of quick jams on that one tech typically to leave him for the guard, and not enough commitment to it. But I will say this, Linderbaum being a smaller center, it really pays off to have Voorhees and Cleveland win these jobs. And even Voorhees and even Jones and Cleveland, or any combination of the three, it really would pay off to have them both win the jobs, because you want big men next to Linderbaum to maximize his value to the team.
Totally agree. Do you want to talk about other places for improvement or go into season?
Sure.
I guess like the only other improvement thing is, and it's just frankly because of circumstances, is that I just want to be able to see that he consistently wins. You know, we just haven't seen a huge body of work from him yet. So, you know, kind of like the baseball analogy of with guards, you know, that sometimes we'll have a bad game, but overall, you know, through a whole season, they're good. I just wanted to make sure, you know, that he has that consistency. So that's the only thing I want to see, is just like, I guess, stamina, you know, for lack of a better word, throughout the whole year.
You know, the Ravens have been blessed with consistency at guard in particular, with players like Yanda and Zeitler, who, you know, basically score the same every single freaking game because they're so good. And they've also been cursed with the consistency of Simpson, who had this incredible run of D's. But normally when I'm looking at you know, the game-to-game performance, it's very much like a baseball player. It's an up and down performance throughout the year. It's uneven. You want more good games than bad games. And I'm hoping, I would hope for that for Cleveland. I want an overall positive thing. If he has a couple clunkers, I expect that out of him in year four. You know, you hope if he's a better pass blocker, that usually puts him in a better position to not have some really bad games, because that's where a lot of the real leverage to the system is for me.
Right.
So hopefully he, you know, he does a pretty good job there. And if he misses some level two blocks in the run game, I'm not going to be that critical. You know, but it certainly won't show up in his score to the same degree it would if he gives up a sack a game. All right, good season. What where are you for on a good season for Ben Cleveland?
At this point in his career, I feel like a good season has to start with him winning the right guard job and him performing at a level where replacing him with another person is not on our radar. That's it.
That's it. Okay, that's yep. that's pretty good. Okay, so I've got a few things, and I've said it differently, but I think it amounts to the same thing. No sign of any remaining doghousing by Harbaugh. Very important.
True.
I that's got to be over and behind us, and he's got to be the presumptive starter, and I think that you've certainly hit on that. Characteristics as a run blocker fit well on the right side. Okay, we've talked about it. Torque and displacement, those are the big things. Can he work with Linderbaum to get some double teams started? That'd be fantastic. But whatever they need him to do at right guard, is that really going to be a better fit for him than what he was assigned to on the left side? Impresses with both displacement and torque. I think if we're still wondering why isn't he moving people, and it's Ben Cleveland, that's a really bad thing. If it's Kevin Zeitler, I'm less concerned about it. I'm more concerned about a player like Zeitler or like Yanda, for that matter, not being a displacement player, even though those guys had good pad level and they could get underneath the defender. I'm more concerned about positional blocking. And as they rotate their hips through a pull situation, are they doing it properly? Are they making it difficult, you know, snap after snap after snap as a pass blocker? But in terms of Cleveland, if we don't really see true displacement out of him, then his other weaknesses, you know, will show up more. You know, his inability to hit on some blocks, is, you know, some of the slowness out of his stance, some of the other things, you know, are more likely to be a problem if he's not really getting displacement a lot of the time. And then pass blocking continues to be solid. So he pass blocked at a very good level last year. It would be great to see that continue for a whole season. That'd be terrific. But continues to be solid is all I'm asking out of a good season.
Fair enough. And then for a great season, I simply said, not only does he win the right guard job, but he gains attention from other teams, either creating himself a nice market in free agency or prompting the Ravens to extend him during the season.
Okay, both very good. I put starting job is never in serious doubt. Ben plays the entire season at right guard with a minimum of 14 regular season games played. Displays elite ability to create space with displacement and torque. So I had that in the good season, but not at an elite level. That's the distinction I'm making. That complements Henry and the rest of the run game very well. Now, Derrick Henry can run over some people, but it's going to be a lot easier for Derrick Henry to run over some people and have higher success rates on his runs if the first contact's occurring in level two. Ben Cleveland and what he does at right guard is a huge component of that. Now, he's not the only guy. Patrick Ricard is very important. It's very important Roger Rosengarten can make some decent run blocks this year, not just be a serviceable pass blocker. But there's a lot of people, of the people who are important, I kind of rank it as Ricard 1, taking Lamar out of here for a minute, because Lamar is, you know,
Lamar
way higher than one. Yeah. But I'd say Ricard is one and Cleveland is two in terms of getting him level two opportunities on a regular basis. And then pass blocking remains at the 2023 level, which was very high, or takes even a slight step forward, avoids a penalty plague season, but I already kind of said that. Avoids a penalty plague, not injury plague, a penalty plague season, particularly in terms of post snap fouls. Very important. Do I care if he gets three false starts? No. Do I care if he's charged for holding four times? Yes, I do. I don't want to see that. And I don't want to see three ineligible receiver downfield plays. I want to be very aware in terms of where he is on the field and not create post snap fouls, which give the defense that option to accept the play or not. So that's where he can, I think, help us the most. But that's a great season for Ben Cleveland.
Yeah, that's a really well put. Great Steven season for him. Do you feel, I guess, like you would feel though that season would be good enough that he would either have to be extended or like probably get a nice comp pick out of him?
Yes. I think he would. I think, you know, the guard money, I don't know what the guard class looks like next year, but I would think that, that there's going to be a pretty good chance that if the guard money was really good this year, that that, that phenomenon will continue for another year, and that he might be a guy, you know, just he is a massive human being. If you pair that up, we talked about cornerback and your TJ Tampa and Nit Wiggins are guys that their athleticism and their length and their size is corroborated by extremely good coverage metrics. I mean, if Cleveland were to do that with his size, he's going to be one of the most sought after right guards in the whole league, I would think.
I agree. Yeah. I think he has a huge opportunity in front of him, and I hope he does well. You know, I remember really liking him when we got him too. I know it was your second favorite guard. I was pretty excited about the pick as well. And we just haven't seen it yet, but I think this could be the year, and everything's pointing towards him having the full opportunity to show it.
Yeah. All right. Outstanding stuff. Alec, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Tell folks where they can either talk football with you online or listen to your show.
Sure. Yeah. You can find us at One Winning Pod. Releasing shows a little bit less this off season, but we'll be back during the season. And you can also reach me on Twitter as well with @ApolyAnis.
Alec, you hear his name on this show many, many times because he's one of the guys who always seems to be available to talk football. And I really love that. I really appreciate all the contributions you made to this show. And I certainly intend to have you under the season for a defense or offensive review and for every other series we do as well. But I really appreciate what you've done for this program.
Sure.
Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Pick that player you'd like to talk to me about it for the Recollection series. Go ahead and reserve that. Send me a DM so I don't give it away to somebody else, and we'll schedule a show. I'm going to be scheduling more of those for late June and early July as some additional content. And it's just kind of nice to put your recollections about a player that you really appreciated down and have that as a record and also share experience that some of the younger fans may not have had with a player who might have played 15 years ago that they never saw. If you have any other interesting topics, just also hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Alec, thanks again for coming on.
No problem, Ken. It was a joy.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.